Hello, everyone. Thank you for watching The Naturalist Capitalist. On the other end today, I've got Isabella Riley. You guys have seen her all over the place. She's going all over Liberty Twitter, all over the YouTube channels, and I'm glad to have her on. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I appreciate your sense of humor on Twitter, especially the ironic posts that so many people can't seem to understand that you're being sarcastic, because that's a strategy I use a lot too. And I think, you know, a lot of people think I'm just being lazy or trying to cause problems, but there's actually a point to posting that way. And I was wondering, do you have a point to posting that way? Are you trying to get people to think a certain way, or what's your aim with that?
Honestly, I'm not even trying to get people to think a certain way. That's just how I react to situations, even in person. I'm always like calling people out for being hypocritical or making things awkward or saying, like, pointing out how something's ironic. Or I always love when people don't understand that I'm joking. Like, I saw you reply to someone's tweet saying, people keep calling me an Israeli shill. I've literally never tweeted about the Israeli-Palestine situation. Not once, because you want to know what? I don't care. I don't care about the conflict. I don't care about things happening in other countries. And I know conservatives will get mad at me. Leftists will get mad at me, but I don't tweet about it. And I just think it's so funny that it was Memorial Day. I forgot that I even made that tweet, but I quote tweeted Lindsey Graham, you know, with the prime minister of Israel, mm-hmm. You know, Israel needs more. And I was like, happy Memorial Day, Israel first. And someone said, like, I've had this comment before, you know, I used to like all your tweets, but unfollow because you're an Israeli shill. Can't tell that I'm joking there. And I just swear these people have low IQs. I mean, it's not obvious to you. And then what's also funny is, so people will always say they can't tell if I'm being serious or not in real life and Twitter. And I find that to be just a great power I have over people, because I say some crazy things and I also have very crazy opinions. So sometimes people are like, okay, I can't tell if you're being serious or not. And I'm like, that's your problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do the same thing, and I never say ha ha or do a laughy face or the S for sarcasm whenever I'm posting something. And sometimes I remember, okay, I'm reaching thousands of people here, so I guess maybe I should be sometimes careful. So sometimes I'll have one like typed out, ready to send it, and I'll just be like, man, this is really good, but I don't. And then sometimes I'll send it and sometimes I won't. Do you ever have that where you're like, okay, I mean, I really care about this a lot and I have so many people following me, they're not going to know what I'm really saying? Or do you just always go for it and, you know, let what happens happen?
I tend to tweet pretty much any thought that crosses my mind, but there are some times where I'm like, okay, is this joke worth the problems? Like, there's one tweet that I've wanted to send, and I talk about it with my dad all the time. I want to say, stop Asian hate, it's just Wong. It's a joke.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's I actually thought it was fine. And he was like, I don't know if it's worth it. So, and I'm like, okay, well, I guess weighing the pros and cons, is that joke so good that it's worth causing problems? But I don't know. I can't stand how woke everyone is and can't take a joke. Like, it's just, that's very annoying to me. But yes, there's a ton of tweets that all the time. I've even tweeted in the past, God, if only I could tweet everything I really wanted to, but you know, you're all too wimps for it to deal with it. And that's truthfully how people are on Twitter. I mean, there's sometimes I tweet things that I can't even believe that people get so offended by. Like earlier today, I tweeted, it's not cute when guys play video games. Like, I don't understand who that's offending. Like, so either you're a guy that plays video games, but you like it. So why do you care what I think? You enjoy it. Who cares what some random girl on the internet says? Or you're a guy and don't play video games. So what, you're offended on behalf of guys that play video games? It's like, I don't know. If someone were to tweet something that was something I did that they found annoying, that's their prerogative. Who cares? I just don't care what other people think about me. I've never have. So it's hard for me to understand why so many people are like that, especially grown adult men. But that's the world we live in today.
Yeah. I don't have a lot of respect for people who can't see through the obvious sarcasm or the obvious bullshit, you know, because I feel like that doesn't just pertain to jokes. It pertains to the media and stuff that you just see in regular life. It seems that the people who pick up on sarcasm also can tell when they're being manipulated in general. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of the people who just take things at face value when it comes to humor, they're that same way in real life. Have you noticed that at all?
Yes, for sure. And something my dad's someone that jokes around with people all the time. We have the same sense of humor. He always says, I'm the female version of him. And he always says, you're no fun because I can never trick you. I can never get you, because I just always can see through the BS. He like he cannot get me to fall for anything. I just can read situations very well. I can read people's body language and what they're saying. I also remember everything that people say to me. So God forbid you contradict yourself. Like years later, I will be like, I remember this one time where you did this, and I just have a brain that always thinks this way. So yeah, for me, I can always sense when people are joking or being serious or not being serious or are being serious. But yeah, I agree. People that there's, you know, and it's something. So my mom, I know, going back to my family, she always will like pretend that she'll know that my dad's joking about something to like get her mad, but it's almost as if she wants to get mad. And that's what I feel a lot of people are. They want to be outraged. They enjoy the feeling. So I don't know if they are blind to it or they just want to. It's very strange for me, but yeah, I have noticed a correlation between how people can sense things online and sense sarcasm and whatnot, and as well as in person.
Yeah, for sure. So I want to get into a little bit about you, because you're brand new, at least to the Liberty space, for everyone noticing you, at least. I was wondering, where were you before that? How did you find us, and what do you think of us so far? Or, I mean, I know you were your dad was a Ron Paul guy, so you've always known about libertarians, but are you kind of new to the Libertarian Party and all the people who are pushing the liberty message all the time? Or
yeah, so basically I started posting about social or politics on social media December 2020. I just made like a political TikTok account, made political videos. My account got banned, and then I made it's been reinstated since then, but when my account got banned, it's when I took everything on Instagram. So now I just post my TikTok videos on Instagram. I hate Instagram. I think it's the worst social media platform out of all of them. And then I had a Twitter account from high school that I haven't used in years. Like, I didn't use it in college at all. And when I went to CPAC, which was the first like political event I've ever been to of 2021, my friend said, you need to start taking Twitter seriously. So that's end of February, March. I deleted all my past tweets from high school because those would definitely get me in trouble. And then I just started tweeting everything I thought since then. And I just try to tweet as much as possible. So I definitely am new into this space because I wasn't really using Twitter before until early March is when I actually started taking it seriously. So yeah.
Yeah. So did you find the Libertarian Party people through Twitter, or did you already know about a lot of them? Were you already following them, or how did you come across them? Like Dave Smith, Tom Woods, and then like the smaller people like me or Josh Smith or Clint from Liberty Lockdown. Was that all through Twitter or?
Yeah. So I have been a fan of Michael Malice for a while. Through him, I fell in love with Tom Woods and Dave Smith. And then, yeah, I follow them on Twitter. And naturally, as you see, like you keep tweeting and things that you agree with, you see other people retweet stuff. That's just how it happened. So Twitter's great for networking. It's really great because there's all these people on Twitter I would have never met or even known of if I stayed on just TikTok and Instagram. So I love Twitter for that. But I mainly found Dave Smith and Tom Woods through Malice from YouTube. That's all I watch. So love them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's hard to tell, like, where your political background is. Did you really like Trump, or you just liked his attitude, but you didn't like him as a president? Just give us your position on Trump, I guess.
Okay. So I know libertarians hate when I say that I like Trump, but the reason I like Trump is like pretty much the opposite reason why conservatives like him. Conservatives will say, I love Trump. His policies are good, but his rhetoric, his tweets, eh. I'm the opposite. His policies and actions, eh. I loved his rhetoric. I loved his tweets. I loved his mean tweets. And I wish his actions actually mirrored his rhetoric more. What I liked about him was that he popularized terms like fake news media, enemy of the people. He got these sort of phrases popular. And some people, it's hard to really know something unless you have words to conceptualize it. So I think he did a lot of great things based on his rhetoric, because I don't even know. Like, he also helped the Republican Party become anti-war, anti-establishment. You know, I don't like the Bush Republicans. I don't like any of the establishment people. I definitely like the populist Republicans more because they're anti-elitist. So I liked him for that. But he did grow the size of the government. So obviously I don't love his policies, but something that people can't seem to understand is, you know, I can like Ayn Rand and Donald Trump at the same time. Guess what? I don't agree with it. Just because I like someone doesn't mean I agree with all of their positions. I don't agree with anyone's positions fully unless it's myself. So we're all different individuals. So people are very annoying on the internet. I'm sure you get it all the time. You can't think this if you think that.
Right.
It's like, shut up.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I actually come from the Republican side. I was a super neocon. I was a Mike Huckabee fan, even though I was younger. And in high school, Ron Paul sort of caught my attention, but it wasn't until after I left high school, left the house and everything, that I started becoming more of a libertarian. So I really understand how Republicans think, and most of my friends, most of my family are Republicans. And I don't know, like, I feel like right now, because the Democrats are in charge, the Republicans are easier to reach. But I don't feel that in general, their philosophy is that much better, at least when it's lived out. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe they'll give lip service to some things that we would agree with. But then when you look at how the legislators are, and then what the voters actually seem to push for, you're like, whoa, 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 I thought you were for small government and, you know, you don't want to police how people live. But then you see these issues pop up and you realize, ah, that's not really what you're all about. Do you consider yourself a lot closer to the Republicans than the Democrats, or do you think it's more of a wash, or what do you think?
I definitely find myself much closer to the Republicans than the Democrats. I think a lot of Republicans would be libertarian if they understood the issues more and understood, you know, maybe you think you're voting for someone, a politician that's going to be pro-freedom and pro-spreading liberty, but then when they actually get into office, what do? So mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of people that don't understand their political ideology, and I think that you have a way better chance of converting Republicans than I think Democrats. Like, I don't even see myself even attempting to try to change them. I think maybe the Democrats, like Tulsi Gabbard, I don't think she'll stay a Democrat for the rest of her life. You know, she doesn't seem like a Democrat. I'm really talking about like the progressives, you know, the people that have hijacked the term liberal, leftist. They're so intolerant that, I don't even want to share a country with them. I mean, I don't want to have a country to begin with. That's a whole nother conversation, but I'm like very pro national divorce. I want nothing to do with them. I tweet that occasionally. I think I tweeted that yesterday. I want nothing to do with these people. And what the good things that they had that would align with the Libertarian Party is anti-war. Well, we really discovered that they're not really that anti-war, are they? Well, at least the establishment people aren't. So Joe Biden surely isn't. So I don't know. So today, since you used to be a Republican, do you agree more with the Republicans, or are you kind of like ew to both equally?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it depends on what's going on. Like right now, the Republicans sound better because they're not in charge. But when they're in charge, they act like Democrats. I mean, for example, remember that stimulus bill that passed right before Christmas that sent like hundreds of billions of dollars overseas and almost nothing went to people. It was all corporations and militaries or whatever. Everyone was saying, you know, we got to get this tiebreaker in the Senate for the Republicans so that there's gridlock. And I was like, did you see how they voted on that bill? I think like 47 Republicans out of, you know, basically half of the Congress voted no and everyone else voted yes. So I don't think they ever really hold the line. And when they're in complete control, you know, they don't do anything about gun rights. They don't do anything about spending. And then when the Democrats are in charge, they don't really do much of the things that their constituents want them to do. They spend a lot of money, but they don't spend it on what their constituents want. Like their constituents want Medicare for all or UBI or something like that, but they're going to spend it on infrastructure and they're going to spend it on basically like a corporate way of trying to create a Green New Deal or something. They're not going to do what the true progressive left wants them to do. So as far as the parties go, I look at them as exactly the same. I don't think the Democratic Party is any worse than the Republican Party. I think the Republican Party at this point is controlled opposition. Because the Democrats will say, OK, we'll do a $6 trillion spending bill. And the Republicans will be like, whoa, 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 that's insane. How about a $3.5 trillion bill? And then they'll meet in the middle at like, you know, five. And then that's a compromise. It's like,
right. You know? Yeah. Michael Malice has a great quote where he says conservatism is just progressivism driving the speed limit. And that is so, so true. I mean, I'm not anti, LGBTQIA+. To me, I hate all identity politics. So I think any Pride Month is stupid and it's annoying. Any single Pride Month. Mm-hmm. So, but Ronna McDaniel, who she's I think the chairman of the RNC, she tweeted like Happy Pride Month, blah blah blah, like gay flags and whatever. Which it's not for me. It's not anything to do with the gay people. It's the fact that we're celebrating these identity politics celebrated by these Pride Months, which I think are all stupid. So that, I mean, and I quote tweeted that I was like, and I did the Michael Malice quote because it's so true. You know, we just had Shauna Hannity had Caitlyn Jenner on his show. Again, I don't care personally what you do. If the point is saying that conservatives would not be embracing these people not too long ago, but now it's kind of like the left, what they do is they tell the everyone else that they want so much extra more. Like they go they set such insane standards so that by the time there's a compromise, they still get done insane stuff, but it doesn't sound as insane because they were asking for such an incredible more amount. So yeah, I agree with you. The parties are both equally bad, and they both, there's only a, I would say though that the Republican Party does have actually a, like at least a handful of good people. Whereas the Democrats, I mean, what, they only had Tulsi and she's gone now. She's not in Congress anymore. So
I only would have said the Republicans had like three or four good people, though.
Yeah,
I mean, I'll agree that they just had Tulsi on the Democrat side. But I mean, like Thomas Massey,
Rand Paul
most of the time. And then Mike Lee's not horrible.
Yeah,
And, you know, Justin Amash was a libertarian already. So I don't know. it was a pretty bad pretty bad comparison. Like neither side really did it for me. But then when it comes to the people too, like you know, not just the people they elect, but the actual electorate, I don't think the Republicans are really anti-war. I agree with you that the Democrats aren't anti-war, but I don't think the Republicans are either. And I saw that with the Soleimani airstrike a little over a year ago, and Trump was banging the war drum like we were going to go to war with Iran. And all of my Republican friends were 110% behind it. It was like going back to 2003. It was crazy because, you know, the Democrats have started pretty much every war since Bush was in office. So then to see a Republican gearing up to start a war and all the Republicans cheering it on, it really just brought me back to 2003. And I was just like, holy shit, nothing's changed. And then, you know, what I was hearing from all my Republican friends this year was how, you know, Trump was fighting for the bigger stimulus package. And I understand, like, if it's going to the people, it's better than going to corporations. But still, like, they weren't talking about closing, you know, opening everything up that much and defying the lockdowns. It was all like, Trump's going to get us the bigger stimulus package. And so I don't know, like, the actual Republican voters seem just as lost as the Democrats. And I just think it's because the Democrats are in charge right now that they're so much more annoying. You know, like once if the Republicans were in charge and they had the same cultural influence right now that the Democrats did, I would probably hate them just as much. I just think it's that the Democrats kind of control the culture. So even when the Republicans are politically in charge, the culture is still very progressive or whatever. But I remember back in, you know, I remember 15 years ago or whatever when the, or more than that now, I guess like 20 years now, when the Republicans controlled the culture. And I mean, it wasn't any better. It was just a different form of authoritarianism. So I don't know. To me, it's kind of a wash, but.
Yeah, I agree. And some I've heard, like, people will say, oh, Trump didn't start any wars. And yes, that's good. But what a low bar we have to set that, wow, he's such an anti-war great president for not starting a war. So like, let's bring all the troops home. So that's, it's, we have to set really low bars. But, you know, there was a time, wasn't that Trump almost retaliated with, I forget the exact situation, but then he said, no, they didn't kill any of our men. They just shot at a rocket. So like, there is like, yeah. So, I mean, I agree. Like, it's obviously starting a problem if you're going to aggress by killing a third leader, but there are parts where he did pull back. So it could have been a lot worse. You know, the Democrats really love to play up the fact that Trump was going to start all these wars and be like a crazy, like, you know, Hillary Clinton was like, he can't have that button. He's going to go wild. So he definitely proved them wrong with that. But yeah, it'll be interesting because he's mostly, I mean, he's probably going to run. He said on Candace Owens' show that I would announce something, but the FEC would be very mad at me. So I'm going to wait. But I think he'll be excited for my announcement. And by the way, Trump rallies are starting soon. So he will be running, which will be interesting because the party's really like, there's one person that polls sometimes better than him, and that's Ron DeSantis. So some people say they'd be a great ticket. I don't see these two alpha males being on a ticket together. I've met Matt Gaetz a few times and hung out with him, and he says he actually doesn't think Ron DeSantis would ever run because he's such an introvert. So a lot of people will say Ron DeSantis is doing so many great things, he's setting himself up to run, but I always say maybe he just wants to be a good governor. I don't know, like, does it just because if someone's doing great things in their words, great things, I agree with some of the stuff he does, I also don't agree with some of the stuff he does, but in their words he's doing amazing things, it doesn't necessarily mean he's setting himself up to run. But I did just recently change my party affiliation to the Libertarian Party, and I'm fully backing Dave Smith. There's no way I couldn't. I know he hasn't technically announced that he's running, but that he most likely is. There's just no way I could not put my full support behind someone who I've listened to hours of him talking by now. I've never disagreed with a thing that he says. And the fact that Michael Mouse would be the press secretary, dream come true. I could die happy knowing that if that became a reality.
Yeah. So what do you expect to come out of a Libertarian Party run? I mean, what do you think that looks like? Is it just a middle finger to everything that's going on? Or do you think we can actually bring people over to the Libertarian cause? Or what does that look like to you?
So I don't think that he has a chance of winning, but I do think that he has another chance for what Ron Paul did, which is what made Dave Smith a Libertarian, wake a ton of people up. And I think Dave Smith's a really good communicator. He's not someone that's going to sugarcoat things to like make it sound good. He's very, I like extreme people. He's extremely in the direction of liberty. That's what I love. He's not going to water down his message. So I really think that there's a huge chance for him to liberty pill a ton of people. So I think that we will be spreading liberty, and I'm very excited for this, and it will be very interesting to see how it plays out. Very interesting.
Yeah, for sure. We're in an interesting time right now because, you know, last year I joined the Libertarian Party last year, and I felt like a lot of libertarians were trying to pander to the left a little bit too hard. And I see a lot of them trying to pander to the right too hard now. And I just say what I think. I mean, I know you follow me on Twitter, and I'm always making a lot of people angry. And something that they're saying all the time is, you know, if you could just tone down on the anti-cop rhetoric and the anti-border patrol rhetoric, then you could get like all of us to vote for you. And I understand the temptation to want to do that. I understand why people would want to give up on principle to make a short-term gain. But then we just become the same as the Democrats and Republicans. So, do you see them doing that too? Do you see a lot of people tempted to kind of pander to the right wing, or have you not noticed that so much?
I don't know if I've noticed it so much, but I completely agree with you, where for me, I would never, like, I'm someone that I'll tweet whatever I think. I don't care if you agree or disagree with me. I don't care who gets mad at me. I don't care if I get ratioed. I don't care. I don't care if the majority hates what I have to say. That the majority doesn't mean it's a correct opinion. So I'm someone that I don't really care if I have people that agree with me. And I don't like that message. I don't like changing and lying about what you truly believe in just to get more votes. You know, I don't think that the overall goal is just to get as many votes as possible. I think it's about spreading the message of liberty being a true libertarian and individualist. It's not compromising your views to get majority popular support. It's totally antithetical to the whole philosophy behind libertarianism. So I completely agree with you on that. And, you know, I feel like there's a lot of tweets that I never even see, because do you have examples of them pandering to the right? But I do know I don't like the woke libertarians. That's why I have paleo libertarian in my bio to differentiate myself from them, because all my conservative friends would be like, you're a Lowberg. No, I'm not. Don't associate me with those people. So I'm definitely not that, but
yeah. I mean, I actually think, you know, a lot of people are incorrect when they're calling those types of people left libertarians or right libertarians. Most of the woke libertarians I know are actually right libertarians that are just woke. I mean, if you position them on the political compass, they'd be in the bottom right, but they're just, I don't know, they're they're off the charts with, you know, their language policing and their thought policing and everything. And yeah, I hate those people just as much as you do. But I guess what I'm seeing is it's not coming from the top. Like, I think people are really unfair to Dave Smith when they say that he has a right-wing message, because I really don't think he does. I mean, or the Mises Caucus. You know, a lot of people say that about the Mises Caucus, that it has a Republican light messaging. They put out some pretty staunch statements about the police and about the drug war and about all these things that definitely do not attract Republicans. So I don't see it so much from leadership. I just see it from a lot of new people who are wanting to come in the party, and they just are telling us like, hey, you just got to get rid of this plank and this plank and this plank, and then, you know, then you'll get more people. And it's like, well, we could also add Medicare for all to the plank, and we could also add UBI, and we could also add gun control, and then we would get more people from the other side too. But we just have to be who we are and run on it, or we're not any different than the other two, is kind of what
I think. Because you could keep adding, like, where does it end? You could add this, and then we'll get more people from here, and it just never ends. So yeah, I completely agree with you. And I mean, I guess technically, you could see like the more paleo libertarians are more traditionally like the tradition of American values and the nuclear family. They don't want the government to be, you know, mandating this behavior, but they do prefer those things. So I do like, I do understand where they could, but I know Dave Smith, he used to be more of a, like a left, now he's like lefty, but he was very anti-war and he didn't really align himself with either party, but he probably leaned to the left. And I don't think, I know he's pro-life, so maybe there's some positions, but I really, I don't think they're necessarily right wing, but I do see what people are coming from, because I definitely like the people that are libertarian. Like I associate with, I like the Mises Institute. Those are the people I really like. I named one of my guinea pigs Ludwig after Ludwig von Mises. Those are the people I agree with a lot. So, and I definitely would consider myself way closer to the right than the left. So I do understand where people are coming from with that. But if you just look at the issues by issue by issue, if you look at all their stances, it's all logically consistent with the government being the enemy of this, or where the government's our biggest enemy. So.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. The only thing I wanted to ask you about that I've seen you, I've watched a few other videos is immigration. And this is like, I know that there's nuance on this position with libertarians, but there's some libertarians who like want to build a wall and they want closed borders. I just wanted you to explain what your position on immigration is.
So it's definitely one that I haven't fully like made my mind. I definitely need to do more research on, but if there's one thing is I do understand, and I personally would like to control who's coming in and out of the country. And even in terms of trading, you know, if other countries were to be completely free market and treat us the way we treated them, that'd be awesome. But they just aren't. So I'm kind of under the principle of treating other countries how they treat us. That's why I go back. I go so back and forth, because I'm so badly want to say I'm an anarchist, like an ANCAP. But at the same time, I do understand the proclivity to have borders, to control who's coming in and out of the country. You know, drugs, human trafficking, that sort of things. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the government is the only effective way to be doing this, right? Like you can have different voluntary societies, but I do understand, like that's something I'm still trying to figure out, but obviously it's not a libertarian. That's the one thing I'll say I disagree with libertarians on, because obviously if we're going to build the wall through the government, it's going to be coming out of taxes. So obviously it's not really libertarian. So I understand the contradiction, but it's definitely one I struggle with. And I know Dave Smith is also someone that's like, I understand where conservatives want some borders. So I don't even know his full position on it. If we completely operated with a free market and there was no welfare state, then I'd be fine with open borders. Like that I do see. But in the reality of where we are now, we're never going to get rid of the welfare state. So it's kind of like one of those things where in a perfect world, if I could create my utopia and there'd be no welfare state and it's all operated by the free market, whether they can get hired and fend for themselves, fine. If they're not usable and if they're not good for the community, they will not be able to make money. So they'd want to leave. So, but that's just not the reality we live in today. What are your stances on this, by the way? Because I'm still trying to make up my mind. I'm very confused.
Yeah, no, and I'm definitely not trying to badger you. I'm just trying to.
Oh, you know, you're fine. Badger me. I don't care.
But yeah, I'm an open borders guy. And the reasoning behind it is I'm an individualist. I mean, so I think of it philosophically and then logically, but I'm an individualist. So I think individuals have natural rights, and I don't think it should depend on where you're born. So if you're born 10 feet away from someone else on the other side of a line that a government has drawn, I don't think that should dictate, you know, whether you have the right to come somewhere or not. And, you know, I believe in private property, and people point to that a lot. They'll say, well, if they don't want someone coming across their land, they shouldn't. I'm like, yeah, okay, I agree with that. But then, I mean, I can go to Wyoming too. I'm crossing private property to go to Wyoming. I mean, it's not, you know, the idea of if everyone owns their own property and protects their own borders, like we have that in the United States right now, and you can still travel. And the thing with immigration is I think there's a lot of fear mongering, you know, that they're coming here and they're bringing crime and they're a drag on the system. We got a rapist. Yeah, whatever. And I mean, if you look at the statistics, they're actually better people than most Americans are, most immigrants and most illegal immigrants who come here. And I've worked with them a lot. I worked with them for like 6 months in Colorado doing roofing. And everything that the conservatives hate that we're getting away from, you know, they hate we're leaving religion. They hate we're leaving hard work. Like, that's what Mexicans are. They're religious and they're hardworking. And so I don't really understand the hatred they have toward them, because they kind of are emblematic of what conservatives say they want to be. They want to be family oriented, hardworking, religious, all these things. And then on top of it, I think that when you want a wall or border security, you're giving up a lot of freedom for a false sense of security, you know, because they use that to leverage certain powers over you that they wouldn't otherwise have. Like, the Border Patrol can stop you anywhere within 100 miles of the border all the way around the country, like 100 miles from Canada, 100 miles from the ocean, 100 miles from Mexico. And I lived in Arizona for a while, and they'd have checkpoints on the road where they're just stopping you and asking you if you're a citizen, and they can pull you over and search your car if they want to. And so this is all supposedly in the name of protecting me, or, you know, protecting my wages or something. But, you know, most of the jobs they're doing when they come here, they're jobs that Americans don't want to do anyway. They're jobs that they're doing more effectively than Americans would most of the time, because they're just harder workers. And then, like, we're
and for cheaper that, and for yeah, cheaper, because they don't cheaper. Have the experience. So it's better for the businesses and them, because they actually can get hired. But actually, I think all the points that you make are valid. I there was something you were saying in the beginning that I totally agree with. I agree with everything that you said. So another thing that I see a problem with is the fact that they tend to overwhelmingly vote for Democrats.
Yeah,
that's a problem. Like, conservatives, that's a valid concern.
Yeah, the problem with that, though, is because the other party is so horrible to them. You know, they'd probably vote Republican if the Republicans weren't so there wasn't so much animosity toward them from the Republicans, because their value system is more in line with the Republicans.
Socially, I know what you mean.
And it kind of
hard work, family. Religion.
And I've heard, you know, some black people talk about this too. Like, a lot of black families in the inner cities would probably vote Republican if the Republican rhetoric was better, because they're very conservative, very religious, very pull yourself up by your bootstraps, all this stuff. But with open borders, I also believe in getting rid of the welfare state, like you said. And then I also don't believe in amnesty. Like, I don't really believe in making everyone citizens, because I think that is, you know, a detractor. If everyone can just move here and then vote, you know, you can't do that in other countries. I mean, you can't just move. You can't just go into Mexico and work there and then vote. So, you know, that's a different deal. But as far as letting people come across the border and work, or letting them move here, like, I don't care. I mean, I think that it's mostly fear mongering to, you know, that's just kind of propped up these state programs like border security, and I just think it's all pretty unnecessary. But
I think you make all valid points. So, I mean, yeah, it's just because in terms of the fact that we do have a welfare state, though, it's like, what is the solution? I mean, it's never going to be a solved thing. That's the thing. I realize I'll be forever miserable and unhappy with what goes on around me.
Yeah.
But it is a tricky situation.
Well, it's like, end a bunch of wars. We got to end the war on drugs. We got to end the war on poverty, end the war on terror. You know, I mean, all these things are attributing to the problems with immigration, you know, like the war on terror, destabilizing countries, you know, the whole thing about how many Syrian refugees should we allow into this country that we were arguing about a few years ago. It's like, well, we wouldn't be having this argument if we hadn't destabilized Syria and pushed all these refugees out of that country and created this mess. If we didn't have the war on drugs, we wouldn't have the problems we have with the cartels. If we didn't have the war on poverty, we wouldn't have this massive bloated welfare state. So it's about, I mean, you're right. We got to, it's not just like one problem we got to attack. It's a bunch of things.
And the common enemy is the state.
Exactly. Yeah.
Always.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, a lot of, I just think that that position that a lot of people have with closed borders has just been kind of propagandized. And it comes with a lot of like small government people too, because they just haven't like really, I think a lot of them haven't lived down there and seen how it works. And then a lot
I haven't. Yeah. I have not at all. I've been in the Northeast my whole life, so definitely.
Well, I was a like huge Border Patrol person when I lived in New Hampshire, because I'd never seen what it's like down there. I'd never met any Mexicans. New Hampshire's like 99% white or something like that. And then so in my mind, this whole illegal immigration thing, it was like, oh yeah, if someone comes here illegally, then we should just kick them out. And then that's just a formula in your mind that makes sense. And then you get down there and you realize, oh, this guy's been here for 30 years and he has an American wife, American kids. They go to school. He's had a consistent job. And because he came here illegally, I want to kick his door down and kidnap him and send him back across the border. You know, it gets like way more complicated once you're down there and you're living with them and working.
And you put faces to these stories, and it's not just so far removed as I am in the Northeast. I get that. I just think the biggest problem I would have and conservatives would have is the fact that Democrats pretty much welcome illegal immigration in open arms and they try to get them to vote. And obviously that's a problem for Republicans. So yeah.
No, I agree. That's and the I biggest don't problem. I don't think the Democratic politicians give a shit about Mexican immigrants. I think that they are a consistent voting block that they want. And I think the same about like a lot of minorities. You know, the Democrats don't really care about them. They just know that they can turn them into a voting block that's completely dependent on a welfare state that's purposefully screwing them over. So yeah. I think it's a great place for libertarians to step in and say, hey, we do want you guys to be able to come here and work, and we're going to make it easier for you. And we're not going to throw all this statist bullshit on top of it and gun control and, you know, a Green New Deal and everything else.
But you have to support yourself.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that we could be very attractive to that entire block where the Republicans have just completely screwed it up and they don't really want to turn around on it.
Yeah, because they kind of have made it seem like illegal immigrants are the enemy of the Republican Party. So that's definitely not a good position to put themselves in. And I also see the COVID situation, all the lockdowns, such a good opportunity for libertarians to rise up and say, what was the problem? It was these local, the governors and your mayors shutting everything down. And the only reason that you guys are having problems is because the government made you close your business, told you how to run your business. And that's a great thing for the libertarians to really step up on. I don't think they do enough. I wish that there was more good voices, but that's what's good about, you know, all these new libertarian podcasts. There's so many new voices coming out now and they're being outspoken and they're not afraid to speak their mind and say things bluntly. So I love all that. And I think good things are coming.
Yeah. I mean, the libertarians can really be the party of the middle class because the two other parties really screwed them over the last year. I mean, the Republicans were not anti-lockdown. You know, there were some of the voters who were, and then a couple governors and a couple legislators in Congress. But for the most part, they just kind of rolled over and did whatever they want. And anyone who pays any attention, it's so obvious that this was a giant transfer of wealth upward to corporations, away from small businesses, screwing over the little guy. So, I mean, it's the perfect opportunity for us to reach people that used to think we were just like pearl clutching, gold hoarding, ammo hoarding, you know, rednecks. And it's like, well, you know, we actually care about people. The whole reason we do anything is because we want people to be left alone and be happy and be prosperous. I mean, if we didn't care about that, then we wouldn't get involved.
Right. No, I completely agree. And we just want people to enjoy the fruits of their own labor. That's it. It's pretty simple. Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think that libertarians, there needs to be more of us that are outspoken. That's how I feel. And I try to be as outspoken as I can, but there needs to be more of us. I do see, though, more of an alignment with Republicans that are the more populist Republicans, the ones that are anti-establishment, anti-elitist, like my friend Gavin Wax, who's the president of the New York Young Republicans Club. He says, in terms of the Israel-Palestine debate, I don't want to give foreign aid to anyone. Mm-hmm. That's like this movement going on in the Republican Party. So I do see an alliance forming with the paleo-libertarians and the populist Republicans. I really do see that alliance, kind of like the Rothbard-Buchanan alliance back at the end of Rothbard's life. So that's exciting. Although I don't see Democrats at all caring about being anti-establishment at all.
Yeah, there's not as many of them, I don't think. There is like a small sect of them. They're kind of
Bernie bros.
Yeah, well, even like the Tulsi people, which is a very small sliver. But then some Bernie bros and some even some Yang people, you know, they've kind of opened up and been like, okay, I'm interested in this libertarian idea. Because sometimes it's only one issue that can bring them over. If it was Tulsi, it could be the wars, or if it was Bernie, it could be like the war on drugs or something. And then with Andrew Yang, it could, I don't know, you know, whatever it was with him that got someone interested. And I'm for working with anybody. You know, if I can have a single issue coalition with a communist, I'm not going to pretend that they're one of me, they're one of us, but I will certainly work with them to free Julian Assange or to legalize marijuana or whatever. And then the same with a hardcore right winger. I mean, if he wants gun rights or if he wants, I don't know, lower taxes, if I disagree with them on everything else, I'll always work across the aisle with anyone like that. And, you know, that was what Ron Paul did. I mean, he,
yep,
he'd do that with literally anybody. And it's funny because now you sometimes get badgered for saying that. And I'm not saying that they're libertarians. I never said like Tulsi was a libertarian or that
there's a single issue that you can get with behind with them. Like recently, I know Matt Gaetz has worked with AOC to decriminalize marijuana. You know, yeah, neither of them are liberal. Actually, Matt Gaetz says he leans libertarian, so he actually says that. But AOC surely is not. But they can come together and be like, you know, people should not be locked in cages for marijuana. Right. You know, so. Just because you like someone or work with someone doesn't mean you guys agree with everything with each other. I don't agree with anyone besides myself completely. So it's just very annoying that people, like, there's no freedom of association. If you ever associate with someone, then that means you must accept and adopt and want to promote everything that they've ever said in their life.
Yeah. I don't even know if I agree with myself all the time. Sometimes, right? You know, I'm like, okay, I don't really know where I land on this one. This one's complicated. So, yeah, the idea that I'd ever agree with, especially a group of people on everything, is impossible. But with the coalitions, you know, that's the only way to draw people closer to yourself as well. If you are just yelling at somebody that they're statist or that they're right wing or whatever, you're not going to get to them. I mean, there's certainly a place for that. You know, like making videos or whatever, like sometimes if you're just going on a rant, like you can wake someone up. But when you're actually having a conversation with someone face to face, if you meet them in the middle and say, hey, we agree on these things, let me show you why I think this way on this, then they're going to be much more likely to listen to you. I mean, it's like if you're you know, yelling at neo-Nazis about how racist they are, they're not going to care. They're not going to, you know, they're going to be like, yeah, yep, I'm a racist. You got to go and, like, you know, tell them what you actually agree with them on. Like, hey, you're a family person or something. And then you, like, you know, you find some sort of connection with humanity with them, and then you say, okay, this is why I think you're wrong here, and, you know, maybe they'll listen to you.
Yeah, just having a conversation. Like, I am always saying to people, you know, I'm willing to change my mind. I tend to not, because, you know, I don't really get faced with things that I think will make me change my mind, but I often will. And it's not that I will disagree with someone just to disagree with someone. I genuinely am open-minded and will change my mind on things if I think the position I previously held was wrong. So what's your position on abortion? That's always an interesting one with libertarians.
Yeah, so I saw your video with Clint, and I pretty much agree with Clint. I'm pro-life, but I don't see the state as being an effective tool for policing abortion. I think it just gets really ugly there. I agree. Yeah, I don't think you guys got into it too much, but I think that preventative measures are a better way to go than trying to regulate, you know, people, trying to stop people from doing it or whatever, like sex education and over-the-counter contraceptives, things like that, you know, and making adoption.
You just sterilize the youth.
There you go. That'll do it. But
that's how you do it.
Yeah, I think that with everything, though, like it's better to attack the root of the problem instead of going after the symptoms. And I think the immigration thing is kind of like that. But it's also like that with trade, like just going after tariffs, putting tariffs on people. It's like, what, you know, libertarianism is all about figuring out what is the root cause of this problem. Why are all these things happening? Like with gun control, you know, trying to regulate assault weapons or something. That's such a symptom that you're going after. You're not doing anything about why there's violence in these inner cities. And it probably has a lot to do with the drug war and the fact that you've gotten people put in jail and they can't get a good job anymore. So they get into gangs. And then, you know, like, I mean, so abortion, I look at it that way. I think we got to take care of the root cause instead of just trying to stop people from doing it. And I think that's also a societal thing, you know, like I think that really saying that you think abortion is bad is an effective way of changing people's minds and also getting information out there about how early on a fetus can have feelings and, you know, how well formed it is in the womb already. Like, a lot of people just have no idea. They think it's 6 months that you're just taking a pill and it dissolves the fetus or something. You know, they don't know you're going in there with scalpels and tearing its limbs off and everything. So I think getting awareness out there about what abortion is and what a horrible thing it is to go through, and then just, you know, making all these alternatives extremely accessible is the way to fight it.
I agree with you. And I think there is like a free market solution to this, with people get more educated on the situation, more preventative measures, like you said, that will help make it not so prevalent. But I think the big problem today in society is how it's become popular, especially with feminists, to shout your abortion. It's a very weird thing. So they're turning it into something that you should be celebrating. And that's pretty disgusting. But yeah, I think if anything, having the government be more anti-abortion and willing to punish people for abortions and whatnot is only going to maybe incentivize the pro-abortion people more. So it's only going to cause more of a retaliation.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think so many of these things are cultural instead of trying to have the state enforce them. I mean, it's way more effective too. If you can get people to truly believe something is wrong, that is going to do a lot more than trying to pass a law to keep them from doing it.
Right.
And I think that in general, like, we've got to change the way people think. You know, people have to start thinking of themselves as individuals, as sovereign individuals, that they have the right over their property and themselves. A lot of people are all about just getting temporary wins, kind of talking about this earlier, but trying to change people's minds on one or two issues and just going after that, which I think is great if you can change someone's mind on war or lockdowns or something. But unless you're changing their philosophy, unless you're changing the way they think about why government is immoral, then you're not really winning the battle. Because for instance, if you can convince somebody that lockdowns are bad and then the lockdowns go away, I mean, okay, so what? What have you accomplished? Unless you've convinced them that lockdowns are bad because the government has no authority over you to tell you to stay in your house because it's illusory power. You are your own individual. You can do what you want. You own your body. You own yourself. Then, you know, it doesn't really matter. If you can get them to think philosophically in a different way, then their position on the issues are going to change. And you're not going to be fighting this constant battle of, oh, no, no, you're wrong on taxes. Oh, you're wrong on this. If you can just get them to think like, you know, think like libertarians, then the issues will resolve themselves. And you don't have to fight them on them all the time.
Right. I think I read about this in The Prince by Machiavelli. Is that how you pronounce his name? Mm-hmm. I don't know. He talks about how it's more effective to when you have someone and you convince them to change their mind, and it takes a lot longer and it's a longer process, these people will be much more loyal to you than people that will quickly just adopt whatever you say. So it's like the same thing with the whole libertarian strategy. If you just get someone real quick to agree with you on one issue, they're not going to be as loyal because they'll just as quickly change their mind and go on to the next. But if you can really take the time and truly convince someone to adopt the libertarian philosophy, then they're going to be loyal. Not saying they need to be loyal to me, but to the philosophy.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Great discussion on immigration. My position was where Dave and Isabella was pretty recently, though I was convinced to the position you laid out. Wow, I guess I got to talk to Dave then. So,
yeah, you should, because I feel like I don't even know his full position on it. And it's something I'm still trying to work out too. So I would love to see that conversation.
Yeah, for sure. Well, what have you got coming up in the future? Do you have any plans to do anything big, or what's going on with your life?
Well, I just started a new show with my friend who I mentioned earlier, Gavin Wax. It's actually on Censored TV, which is Gavin McGinnis. I know the worst person in politics ever, his platform. So that's been a lot of fun. And Gavin McGinnis is really awesome. He actually says that he used to like call himself an anarchist. And he's even talked to me about how he liked how Antifa was in the beginning, being like anti-government. Of course, Antifa is not really fighting fascism of what they're doing today, but he liked the idea of them. So doing that, just pretty much, I need to start doing YouTube videos. I just started posting TikToks there, but yeah, I guess I'm just ranting on Twitter all the time. I guess that's pretty much it.
Yeah, cool. Well, where can everyone find you? Are you just on Twitter? Are you on other platforms still? You said Instagram. Where can people find you and keep up with you?
Yeah, so I'm definitely the most active on Twitter. That's just at Isabella Riley US. And then I also go on Instagram and TikTok, and that's Isabella Riley USA. Too long for Twitter. It's very annoying. And Isabella Riley's taken on everything. It drives me nuts. I can't have one like streamlined name. I also am on Clubhouse. Don't go on there that much, but maybe you'll see me in a room. Do you on Clubhouse?
I am on Clubhouse, yeah.
Okay. I try to go on there, but sometimes I'm just, the rooms get so big and whatever, but and yeah, I know I'm on Gab and Parler. I don't really use them. So I guess we'll just stick to Twitter. Twitter's the best place. I'm rambling as a woman and you shut up. So my apologies.
Well, thank you for coming on, Isabella. I'll try to get you back on sometime. That was a good conversation. And I do enjoy you driving people crazy on Twitter. It's a lot of fun to watch. We have similar strategies sometimes when it comes to that. But yeah, I like seeing new people show up and all these conversations taking place. It's great. So I'll just give you the last word and then we'll kill the stream.
Yeah, I enjoy your Twitter as you enjoy mine. You definitely have the same strategy I do a lot of the times. People's tweets don't really impress me, and yours do. You're one of the very few people that do. But yeah, thank you so much for having me on, and we definitely should talk again. And yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for giving, not silencing a woman. It's very, I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, you got it. All right, guys. I think I'll be back on Tuesday live streaming. Thank you for watching.